Are you ready? Okay, so today what I want to do is I want to talk about six personalities in halacha over the last 100 years of psak halacha. And the six personalities are really divided into three groups, three pairs. The first pair is the Mishnah Berurah. Please take and join us. The first pair is the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. The Mishnah Berurah, the Makoros here, I'll explain how the Makoros work in a minute, but the Mishnah Berurah, I think we're probably very familiar with, Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan, lived from 1838 to 1933, born in Belarus, passed away in Radin in Poland, and his style, the Mishnah Berurah style, is that he basically presents a case. He gives you the spectrum across the spectrum of opinions from Mekel to Machmir, but many times obviously clearly sides with the Machmirim. He does offer those who are Mekel, they have what to rely on, but that's clearly at odds with the Aruch HaShulchan and his style. The Aruch HaShulchan was Rav Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein, lived from 1829 to 1908, in Belarus, and they're often compared with one another. The two, both Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, are compared to one another. The style of the Aruch HaShulchan is described that he will describe it. He quotes the Gemaras a lot more of a fundamental approach. He quotes the Gemaras and the Rambams and the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch and Rambam. Some have even described it as that he even quotes word for word from the Shulchan Aruch and Rambam, as you see in the Hilchos Milah. It will explain what the two differences are when we look at the Makoros, but it's basically a summary of the Simanim, as many describe it. It's a summary of the Simanim of the Shulchan Aruch. Right, the Aruch HaShulchan definitely more than the Mishnah Berurah, sides of the Mekilim, but without compromising, and really focuses on Minhag. There's a real focus on Minhag HaMakom, a lot more than the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is obviously followed more in the Haredi communities, in the Haredi Yeshivisha communities, while the Aruch HaShulchan is followed more in the non-Yeshivisha world. But the Aruch HaShulchan, very important to know, the main difference, and this really reflected itself in the amount of questions within their communities, but the Aruch HaShulchan was a pulpit Rav in two different communities, both in Belarus and in Russia. In Russia first, then in Belarus. So as a pulpit Rav, he gained greater exposure. You speak to any of your Rabbanim back at home, so he gained greater exposure to more Shilas and wrote his...
Russia
and Belarus. And more Shilas and wrote his Psakim when he was older. He really issued Psak a lot more when he was older. It's true about the Mishnah Berurah also. The Mishnah Berurah wrote his Psakim when he was older. Again, not when he was much older, but Mishnah Berurah lived, the Chafetz Chaim lived, Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan lived a long life, but the Mishnah Berurah was written when he was, let's say, in his 50s and 60s, as opposed to his 20s and 30s, while he didn't serve a shul. So the Mishnah Berurah definitely gets more attention, and if you ask anybody, he's definitely more widely accepted as the Posek Achron. That this is how we paskin. He's the maskana sadavar when it comes to halacha lemaisa, a lot more than the Aruch HaShulchan. Why is that? So there are really two reasons why each of them should be considered the posig achron. First, for the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah quotes more. He quotes, as you can see, we'll explain again that difference. But the Mishnah Berurah, the second of the Maror Mekomos, we'll go back to the first in a minute. Vimsach Beinayim, that's how it starts, and he's quoting all of the Achronim from across the spectrum, from Mekel Machmir, but he definitely quotes more. Combined with more historically, the Mishnah Berurah was followed because many of the Bnei Yeshiva, combined with those after the war, basically made his volumes as relatable halacha more widespread and famous, and more commonplace in Bate Medrash and Shuls. Many others argued, on the other hand, that the Aruch HaShulchan should be respected and accepted, followed as the Posek Achron. Why is this so? So, this is so for two reasons, and you see this in the Aruch HaShulchan Hilchos Milah, for two reasons. One is that he's much clearer. His writing style is a lot clearer. And the second reason is that he quotes more of the fundamental Makoros. If you even look at the third of the Maor Mekomos in Hilchos Milah, Hilchos Bris Milah, in Yoredeyasim, and Reis Samach Beis, Zman HaMilah B'Yom HaShmidi V'lo Kodem, and then he goes off quoting the Gemara in Yevamos, where the Gemara there in Yevamos deals with in Yonei Milah, and then a line later he's quoting from the Gemara in Shabbos in Rav Elazar, the Milah, the 19th parak of Shabbos, which, for many of you who are here tonight, so you're in the halacha shir, we'll see each other in a couple of hours. We're not going to do Hilchos Milah again, but we discussed Hilchos Milah, so you know the Gemaras, you know Yevamos, you know more importantly, you know the central parak, which is the Gemara in the 19th parak of Shabbos, parak of Lazda Milah, and then the third he quotes a couple of others, but he quotes the Rashi Ben Shimshon, but he also quotes before that the Im Nimo Toch Shmona Kasav Harash parak. Perek Tisha Asar in Shabbos, which is Perek Yotes in Masecha Shabbos, so he quotes the Rush. He's quoting, and then he quotes Thagos Maimonios. He quotes Thagos Maimoni. So those are really fundamental makoros, as opposed to, and again, no disrespect to the other Achronim, the Mishnah Berurah is a lot more Achronim based. And that's where he's going to quote, if you look at the second Maor Mekomos in Hilchos Tzitzis, the Mishnah Berurah is quoting the Magen Avraham, he's quoting the Shach, he's quoting the Prima Gadim without mentioning the Gemara. Now again, I gave you an excerpt, but that's the general practice of the Mishnah Berurah. You will see, you know, stylistically, a lot more of the Gemara is quoted by the Aruch HaShulchan. It's true, it's a more fundamental approach to Psak Halacha, a more fundamental style to writing halachic decisions, as opposed to, and that was the Aruch HaShulchan style, as opposed to the Mishnah Berurah. So that's the first reason is that the Aruch HaShulchan is much clearer. The second is that he quotes the four fundamental makoros. And just to digress for a moment, these are the two approaches that, whether you want to call whether you want to call it where people are learning for smicha, but whenever you're learning halacha, there are really two approaches to how to learn halacha. I mentioned this in the Thursday night Chabura a few weeks ago, but I might have mentioned this also on the Monday night recently. And there are really two approaches. One approach is to people who are learning halacha mainly for smicha, although this is true when you're generally learning halacha. You learn every single siman, every single se'if in the Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, everything. And you learn all the Nosei Kelim, and you're learning every Shach and Taz. But you don't really see so many of the Gemaras. You only see the Gemaras, and you're just, you know, skimming them. You see the Gemaras that are quoted by the Shach and the Taz. You see the Gemaras that are quoted by the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, but you're not really spending as much time with the Gemaras, and you don't see all of the Gemaras. As opposed to the other style, which is the style that I inherited from my Rebbe, and he inherited it from his Rebbe, and, you know, it goes back many years, which is the style of more fundamental approach to learning, of seeing the Gemaras, where you see every Gemara, and you know the Gemara as well, and in terms of your approach to Shulchan Aruch itself, you are, picking and choosing which Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, which Shach and Taz. You probably see a lot of Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, but in terms of the Shach and the Taz, and the Nosei Kelim, Pischei Tshuva, as well as Rav Akiva Eiger, and the Gra, the Bir HaGra, so you're not seeing every Bir HaGra, you're seeing selected excerpts. Again, I personally like the second way, which is the fundamental approach, the Gemaras, which is why, you don't need to convince me that I know that he probably lost the battle, maybe he'll win the war, but the Mishnah Berurah really is followed as the Posek Achron, as opposed to the Aruch HaShulchan, and many have argued that that's a mistake. I'm not saying whether it is or isn't, because the Mishnah Berurah is someone who doesn't need anybody's haskama. He was a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and just the amount that he wrote, he wrote well beyond the Mishnah Berurah, well beyond the Shmiras HaLashon. He wrote a ton of Svarim. And so he doesn't need anybody's haskama, but just to be aware, those are the two approaches that developed over the last, I would say, about 90 to 100 years ago of learning halacha and arriving, for a posek, arriving at psak halacha correctly. The third reason, which we had mentioned, was that he was a shul rav, the Aruch HaShulchan. He interacted with congregants a lot more than the Chafetz Chaim, than Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan. Again, he probably interacted, the Mishnah Berurah, he probably interacted with people in the community, but you can't compare. And even nowadays, the shul rabbanim, right? You want to say that the Rosh Yeshiva, the people steeped in lamdas, whatever. The shul rabbanim, no matter who they are, right? At every week, every month, depending on how big their shul is, in any of the communities that you hail from, they're going to a levaya, they're going to a chasana, they're going to a bar mitzvah, they're going to a shul function where, again, life cycle events, they're going to a bris milah, they're going to a bris, where any of these life cycle events come up, and at any of these, at any given life cycle event, plus the non-life cycle events, a shul dinner or something else, a shul function, they're getting a lot of these shilas. So that's the exposure that the Aruch HaShulchan has above and beyond the Mishnah Berurah. What were the other differences between them? So here there are a couple of differences. One is Mekel versus Machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan was more Mekel, a lot more Mekel than the Mishnah Berurah. The second is the emphasis versus non-emphasis on Minhag. I'm not talking about local practice. I'm talking about Minhag in the communities. And as far as the Aruch HaShulchan goes in his writing, we had mentioned it, but he definitely focuses more on Minhag than the Mishnah Berurah. The third difference is the references of phrases, and here's where you have to go up to the first of the Maamar Kamos and El Chassid to the Mishnah Berurah. So this is where the Mishnah Berurah goes to town, bashing people who do not wear the tzitzis out, because the Pasuk says Re'isem Oso, which we're going to say in a few minutes. So Re'isem Oso is Chaytem is Kol Mitzvos Hashem. The only way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis properly is to wear them out. Right? Lo dai shemalimin einehem, you might chsiv reisam also. It's not that they're just ignoring a pasuk in Chumash, who's chartem. Od mevazin hein es mitzvah Hashem yisparach, va'asidin hein litin es hadin al zeh. He adds insult to injury, and he does this a few times, where he says, again, this is one excerpt. He does this many times, where two of his most oft-quoted, most oft-written phrases are, Bal nefesh yachmir al atzmo, and the second phrase is definitely yirei shamayim yatzi yidei shneim, because again he's quoting so many opinions, and he generally sides with the machmirim, even though he says you have what to rely upon, but still yirei shamayim yatzi yidei shneim, and it would behoove any yirei shamayim that they would fulfill both shittos. The Aruch HaShulchan is known for, now just to finish in this pair, the Aruch HaShulchan is really known for Talmudic accuracy, and again, this is reflected in those opinions. This is reflected itself in the writing style, and the second is the focus on Lithuanian minhag, particularly Lithuanian minhag. There's a lot to say for the difference being, Lita versus Poland, right? Lithuanian versus Polish. That a lot of people say the Aruch HaShulchan is definitely more of a Lithuanian posek as opposed to the Mishnah Berurah that's more Polish, and a lot of people will disagree with that only because the Mishnah Berurah wasn't sensitive to Lita halacha and Lita minhag. No, it's just that the Mishnah Berurah, it's just the Aruch HaShulchan rather, definitely focuses more on minhag and is more sensitive to minhag. And what came out of that was that, again, in all of their writing, the Aruch HaShulchan is definitely more Mekel. The Mishnah Berurah, on the other hand, is known for a few things. One is the mention of community halachic practice. Not really minhag, but community halachic practice. The second is giving you the full spectrum of poskim who answer the question. And again, then he says, yirei shamayim yatzi yidei shneihem. The third is the minimum fulfillment of the halacha. And the fourth is the maximum fulfillment of the halacha. Again, giving you that spectrum, but making it clear that most often, he's going to side with the Machmirim. That's in terms, just in the interest of time, that's in terms of the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. The second pair is the Chazon Ish and Rav Soloveitchik. The Chazon Ish of Avraham Yeshaya Karolitz was born in Belarus, right, 1878 to 1953. Born in Belarus, as far as I heard a couple of years ago, I think this has become a lot more famous since I heard it, and I say it with a grin. Rav Soloveitchik is true. It's true about the Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik was a lot more known, let's say, in the modern Orthodox community for sure. But there is a authentic raw video footage on YouTube of the Chazon Ish towards the end of his life. If anybody wants it, I'll send it to them. If any of you want it, I'll definitely send it to you. But the Chazon Ish wasn't only famous for being on YouTube, he was famous for his style, that he didn't analyze pieces of Gemara. What led to this was that he really opposed the brisker approach to learning. He opposed the brisker Mahalach. The Chazon Ish so opposed the brisker Mahalach that he patterned his style. Stylistically, he is so similar to Rishonim, in that he took a very intuitive approach to halacha, meaning he states what's already understood without feeling the need for rayas. This is really at odds with the Rav, with Rav Soloveitchik, who we'll jump to now, 1903 to 1993, born in Prusian, Poland, passed away in Boston, in America. His style was the brisker Mahalach. Plainly and simply, he inherited a Mahalach that he worked very hard at, from his grandfather Rav Chaim and from his namesake, his great grandfather Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. But the style is the brisker Mahalach, which is conceptualizing, fitting certain concepts into precise halachic categories, thought out definitions of the Gemara, and he used that to resolve contradictions in the Gemara. So even though we might be familiar with this, what we're not familiar with maybe is the difference between, as we spoke about with the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the real difference between the Rav and the Chazon Ish. Why do I group the two of them? Only because the Chazon Ish was, because they lived at roughly the same time, but the Rav, obviously was steeped in the brisker Mahalach, and the Chazon Ish so opposed the brisker Mahalach that there really is a difference between their Psak Halacha. The Rav never wrote a Sefer or Psak Halacha, let's say like the Mishnah Berurah, and he wrote all of these things that were written, posthumously and posthumously, and he issued psak for the people in Boston, for YU and the greater modern Orthodox community, the centrist Orthodox community, the Mizrahi community, however you want to call it, and Washington Heights and beyond, which is New York, which is the YU campus, and beyond. Well beyond that. And he ordained, 2,000 Talmidim, but he never wrote a Sefer. The Chazon Ish's Sefer was referred to, this is just an interesting historical note, that the Chazon Ish's Sefer on Halacha was even suggested to Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, of the Rav, to be used in their study of Halacha, mainly because of the breadth of Halacha and its topics, the breadth and scope of halachic topics. But you see a difference between the advantage that the Rav had over the Chazon Ish was that the Rav was a Rav Soloveitchik was a community Rav, while the Chazon Ish, even though he wrote a Sefer, again, you have the pros and cons, you have the advantages and disadvantages, you have the you have what the one has, the other one does not have, and that is that the Rav was a community Rav. Soloveitchik was a community Rav, any way you slice it, whether it's Maimonides in Boston or whether it's YU in New York, and where he went for the summer. But the Chazon Ish, while the Rav didn't write a Sefer, the Chazon Ish did write a Sefer. What he didn't have, what he was lacking, was how far did Bnei Brak, it could be that you heard this 20 minutes ago, but how far did Bnei Brak really stretch? The Chazon Ish's influence really stretched through his Sfarim. And again, you go back to the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, in that comparison, the Mishnah Berurah really spread himself, who was the non-Rav, who was the non-community Rav, the non-pulpit Rav, didn't have a shteller, so the Mishnah Berurah, his influence was felt by people, respecting his Sfarim, and by the Haredi and the Yeshivish communities, spreading his Sfarim. And that's the parallel, even though there were obvious differences in their styles. So stylistically they're different, but in terms of their paths, halachically, historically a little bit, since we are talking about the history and the development of the last 100 years of halacha, that's where they're similar. And that's where the Rav, that's where Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik and the Aruch HaShulchan are similar. Not that they're both Leviim, but that they were both community, shul, in this case, in the Rav's case, school rabbanim, and that's where they had their differences, but that's where they're similar between the first pair, namely the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Chazon Ish and Rav Soloveitchik. The Chazon Ish very much, even though he very much opposed the Brisker Mahalach and felt, you know, again as we described it, as an intuitive approach to learning, that he was so similar to Rishonim, he didn't feel the need to back up his Psukim with Rayas. So the Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish, whatever he felt, he felt. What do I mean by that? So in contrast to Rav Soloveitchik, who felt that Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski in Vilna should be universally accepted, and he told his Talmidim this, since he had an authoritative communal post. He had an authoritative, you know, communal position. He was the Rav of the community, and he got, again, as we explained with the Aruch HaShulchan, he got exposure to so many of these Shilas, and he felt that people, and Rav Soloveitchik felt this way because he was a Shul Rav. You know, there's a certain sensitivity to that, as opposed to the Chazon Ish, who held no such position. He wasn't sensitive to that in the sense that, oh, a Shul Rav, you should follow a Shul Rav. You should follow a Shul Rav. Sometimes the Shul Rav should be posting Achron more than the non-Shul Rav. The third pair is Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman. The third pair is Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman. Of course, Rav Moshe wrote the Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein lived from 1895 to Tanis Esther, 1986. Born in Belarus, so many of these Achronim and so many of the Gdolei Achronim from the last generation, the Gdolei Poskim, lived in Belarus. Born in Uzdan, Belarus. And right, it borders Russia, as well as Poland, and as well as the Ukraine, but... and he passed away in New York City in the United States of America. So his style, what?
What year again?
Passed away in 1986. His style was, it was responsa, it was a shutim, a shalosh tshuvos that assumed on many occasions that a posek can pask in a certain way, can adopt an understanding of halacha, that he honestly thinks is reasonable, even though he wouldn't pask in that way, in his house. And even though he recognizes that the Makoros from Shas, which Moshe does quote, are equally legitimate, even though he wouldn't paskin that way. And this was, in plain English, or in plain Hebrew, this was the application of Shas HaTchak. This is when Rav Moshe came to America, so this is when a lot of these Shilas, and you'll see in his Tshuvas, we're going to discuss one of them in a minute, but, you know, that he spells a lot of, again, there are different, you know, conflicting reports in terms of how good of a command of English he had. Many people, and I think this is assumed, that he understood English fairly well. He didn't speak it fairly well. So, speaking-wise, he didn't have such a command of English, but you see in his tshuvas, he writes the word mikrovave. That's the tshuva that we went through with Bishul Bachama, which we're going to come back to in a minute. He writes those words. Companies, he writes, right? Kuf, ayin, mem, pei, aleph, whatever. You have that when he dealt with Chol of Yisrael, which is a world-renowned tshuva of his. Another one... you know, he writes so many of these things. It could be the people, you know, were whispering into his ear, you know, write this in English. But the exposure that he had being in America to all of these, you know, cutting edge at that time, Shilas, right? Microwaves probably were, not probably, but were invented after the Holocaust. And he got the tshuva of the microwaves in 1971. So we're talking about a difference of 20 years where he let people, you know, people experimented with the microwave, saw how it cooked, and then it was connected to Shabbos Daf Lamedtes, where Masechet Shabbos Daf Lamedtes, where the Gemara there discusses Bishul Bachama. So that's in terms of his understanding of and his sensitivity to halacha, and what led was that he was willing to be more makil for people, but he felt strongly and correctly that halacha takes societal factors into account. And again, many people credited this to his understanding and sensitivity of being in America, where technology was more advanced. We'll discuss two technological tshuvas in the limited time that we have left, but this exposure to society made his tshuvas definitely more meaningful and more acceptable. And make no mistake, nobody, there is no exception to this. Again, we're talking about Ashkenazic halacha, but nobody got the respect that Rav Moshe got in this time. You know, a lot of the poskim got a lot of respect. A lot of them got a lot of kavod for being, you know, Gedolei Hador. But nobody got, you know, the undisputed Gedolei Hador in the Ashkenazi community. We're not talking about Rav Avadya. We definitely do not have the time to. but we're talking about, you know, six of the greatest post-Gym. Again, and what I think is nice about this topic, what's nice about this year and the tshuvas that you're exposed to, is even though the Chazon Ish and Rav Soloveitchik, there wasn't enough room on the page, but there also wasn't enough room because they weren't known for their psak in writing, as Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman, and definitely the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan were, but that's in terms of his style. The Mincha Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, 1910 to 1995, was both born and passed away in Shari Chesed, in Yerushalayim, here in Eretz Yisrael. His style was definitely lucid and clear. He made arguments where he was responding, please listen carefully, where he was responding to the Shaila as opposed to the Shoel. Rav Moshe really responded to the Shoel more than the Shaila. And that's what I mentioned more in terms of the sensitivity to, again, being in America after being born, you know, on the Russian border. So you don't really get exposure to all of these things. And as technologically things got advanced, things advanced through the 20th century. So Rav Moshe was definitely exposed to that. Rav Shlomo Zalman less so, because only because America in the 60s and 70s was more technologically advanced than Israel in the 60s and 70s. But the truth is that you can't compare the shilas that the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan dealt with the shilas that Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman dealt with. So just in terms of technological advancement. So the nice thing, though, besides responding to the Shaila as opposed to Rav Moshe, who more tried to help the Shoel, and the amazing godless of Rav Moshe was that he never compromised halacha while doing that. Nobody would be able to make a case that he could, because he was so, you know, careful, and his tshuvas are so widely respected. Not because he also wrote the Dibros Moshe, which is a lot harder to understand and a lot more involved, because, you know, it is true to a certain degree that once you write a Perush on the Gemara, then your stock basically rises. But it's also that. That just the Gemaras and the poskim that he quotes from his first tshuva on, you know, Kisui Rosh, and the Gemara in Kedushin that he quotes at the end of the first parak and the Chavtes Sugyas, as well as other psakim that he had, brain death we're going to discuss in a second, but that's really where Rav Moshe was definitely responding more to the Shoel than, and the sensitivity to the Shoel than Rav Shlomo Zalman with dealing with the Shiloh. Doesn't mean Rav Shlomo Zalman was not sensitive. If anything, Rav Shlomo Zalman was loved by all camps, and that's by all Hashkafic camps, and that's where it's interesting to note Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's primary posek, not just, you know, Rav Neventhal we know, but Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva of the preeminent Hesder, the late 60s and early 70s. So we can mention that. It's okay. So he first of all, when Rav Shlomo Zalman, and I highly advise taking a look at this article, I think it was first published in the Jewish Action, when Rav Shlomo Zalman passed away in 95, or maybe even, you know, a few years after, he considered Rav Shlomo Zalman his primary Rebbe. Along with Rav Soloveitchik, his father-in-law, I want to make that clear, but in terms of Psak, he went to the Mincha Shlomo more than he went to the Rav. Or just as much in terms of, again, going to somebody in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to somebody in America. And again, that might be true because Rav Aaron came here in 1971. So there was, you know, 20, almost 25 years for them to talk in Psak Halacha. But that was that. Interesting to note that it potentially has a more enduring effect, the Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach and style to Psak. For that reason, as no religious camp can tine on you, can accuse you of catering to kulas, while, not that they did with Rav Moshe, which is 100% Rav Moshe's godless, but the Eda Charedis, if you want to know just something historically, the last 100 years, the Eda Charedis never considered Rav Shlomo Zalman not only their primary posek, but their posek, because they accused him of being too much of a Zionist. And he would refer people of Rabbanim. He did an excellent job, Rav Shlomo Zalman, of referring people to Rabbanim of the, you know, place of origin and the country of residence of the questioner. There are those who say, and it's probably true, that people in Israel shouldn't comment on American politics, and people in America shouldn't comment on English politics, and shouldn't comment on Israeli politics. That's very true. That happens to be very true. And whether you agree or disagree, I'm telling you, it's, you know, a lot of people make mistakes when they start commenting. And, you know, anybody listening to this can, you know, people in Israel have no business in, you know, American politics in terms of telling people, you know, about Das Torah and whatever. But, you know, you want to be their posting, you want to whatever. You first have to research. And if you want to, then at least have the respect for the American public, and have the respect for the English public, and have respect for the Israeli public. This goes true, you know, in America also. It's not just one-sided. Because the reason why I want to be very clear is it's not me saying this. It's that it eventually resulted. This is years and years, and definitely the last 100 years, with elections, with the presidents that we're familiar with the prime ministers we're familiar with. It came into telling people that that's Psak Halacha and that's how to pasken. So you have to be very careful that that's not your agenda, but you also have to be very careful that Rav Shlomo Zalman was a gadol at this. He was a gadol at a lot of things, but he was a gadol at being very careful. You have to go back to the country of residence and pasken that way. And go to a reputable posek there. Just to conclude, they had a number of machloksim in the area of technology and halacha, and one in medicine. The first is in microphones, which is one of your tshuvas. The question was asked, can I recite a bracha or kriyas megillah over a microphone? So Rav Moshe says yes, because it's still a direct call. It's not a kol havara. It's not an echo, quoting from the Gemara in the third parak of Rosh Hashanah about shofar. Talk al-Sochabor. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said no. You're not allowed to. Rosh Hashanah was machmir because it's considered kol havara, aka an echo. The second is the area of microwaves. Is it considered bishul? You know, working off the Gemara at the beginning of Parakira on the third parak of Shabbos of bishul b'chama. Rav Moshe says yes because it's darko b'kach that we discussed, and Rosh Hashanah says no because it lacks an aish. The third area is the area of brain death. Is it considered deaf? Rav Moshe and Yoredeya Chela Gimel Simon Kuf Lamed Beis. I'm going too fast at the end. I apologize. I'll give you the makoros after. Although it's a bit unclear, Rav Moshe does mention in a tshuva to his son-in-law, Rav Moshe David Tendler, who is a Rosh Shiva in YU, that yes, it is considered deaf. It's a total cessation, you know, of respiration. The brain dead, you know, patient means that he's dead. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said no. And Rav Shlomo Zalman's raya was what was known as the sheep experiment, that he would cut off its head carefully, meaning surgically, and prove that it would still be able to carry a child, both humans as well as animals. A pregnant woman who's brain dead can likewise still carry the baby. Just for the last 30 seconds, two things. One is that Rav Moshe definitely got all of his shilas in Igros Moshe, or nearly all of his shilas. I would say all, but I'll say you know, next to all, from Talmidei Chachamim and or relatives, and relatives were Talmidei Chachamim, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman was known to get shilas from everybody. That was another difference. And the other two, just in terms of halacha, is the tshuva of Chalav Yisrael. Rav Moshe, well known that Rav Moshe held that for Yisrael Ro'ehu, you know, for a Jew who needs to see the milking, so for Chalav Yisrael, so we have a government. So any of the milk in your local supermarket, and this is where Moshe held, and he wrote this, and you have this as your last Ma'ar Makom in your Dea Aleph Mem Zayin, that he held that the government is good enough for Yisrael Ro'ehu. And Rav Shlomo Zalman, he was makil and sensitive to you know, what's coming up in the not too distant future with the Shemitah year upon us in the coming year of the Heter Mechira. That this is how we'll conclude, that he said that it's mutter to eat fruit that you grew during Shemitah, even if farmers who rely on the Heter Mechira grew them, the fruit is still Kadosh, B'Kedush HaShviyas, but again, he held for the Heter Mechira. Okay? We'll go to Ma'ariv now.
Who was the big head coach?